Hi, Mickey.
Hey, Bob.
How you doing? Welcome back.
Thank you.
Did you win?
I declared victory.
Oh, good. Well, you're in charge of that. And you got what? 5% of the vote? This is for those who have not been paying attention. This is in your primary race with Barbara Boxer.
That's right. I got 5.2% of the vote, Bob.
Oh. That's even better. And that's like, I mean, translated into raw numbers, that's a non-trivial number of people, right?
They're still counting. It's 104,000 plus last time I checked, which was 10 minutes ago.
There's probably not a football stadium in America that can accommodate all of the Mickey Kouse voters.
That's one way to look at it. I was hoping it's weird. I was hoping to get in double digits.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been victory.
Mm-hmm.
But my baseline goal was to make my friend Jill Stewart lose her bet that I wouldn't get 5% of the vote. So I made her lose her bet, at least so far. There are like a million votes still to be counted,
uh-huh.
Shockingly.
Are you going to demand a recount after they get all those counted?
I don't think so.
Hanging chads can make a big difference.
Not at this race. There is a third guy in the race, Brian Quintana.
Hey, I noticed, where did he come from? I thought it was just you and Barbara. And then this guy picks up what, 14-15% of the vote? What does he have that you don't, aside from 14-15% of the vote?
It's a bit of an Alvin Green-like mystery. He obviously has a Latino surname. And he did better in the Latino farming areas of the Central Valley.
Mm-hmm.
Which leads us to believe that he got a lot of votes that way. Now, I had initially characterized his vote as an anti-Boxer protest vote, too. Of course, it's not if they voted for him out of Latino solidarity. It's a pro-Latino vote. So I can't claim that if you add his vote and my vote together, it's an anti-Boxer vote. But
it is an anti-Boxer vote. It's just not an anti-Boxer vote that's that embodies your ideology.
Well, he's all over the lot. He started off the campaign attacking Boxer from the right, and now that he's won, he's being
co-opted
by the establishment, and he's making cooing lefty noises. Mm-hmm. He's basically a malleable, ambitious guy.
Don't you hate that?
Yes. if he hadn't been there, what would I have gotten? Maybe 6-7%. That would have been better.
Mm-hmm.
But
his Latino members of his Latino base who were not familiar with your view on immigration would have voted for you?
No, I would say if you say I hate Boxer, let's see who the alternative is.
Right.
And you go say there's Quintana or Kouse.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the people who just randomly went for Quintana, not the Latino solidarity people, but some of the other people would presumably have gone to Kouse. So that's all.
Also, if you look at your last name just really quickly, it looks like Kasu, K-A-S-U, and that could be Hispanic.
I don't know. It's arguable that Robert Mickey Kouse is not the most appealing name, just sort of seems.
Is that what it said on the ballot? Is it true that on the ballot it identified you as a blogger?
Yes.
There's your problem, Mickey.
Well, that's what Brian Quintana said, actually.
Wait, he's not the guy who was running? Wait,
Brian Quintana is the guy who finished in second place.
Okay.
That's all I'm going to say on the subject.
Does he do porn films?
No, he produced one of the Superman films. I mean, by Hollywood standards, he's maybe not sleazy. But
that's not sleazy.
He's a producer.
I'll show you sleazy.
He's litigious, so I don't want to use that word again.
But what did he say about the...
Sleazy is not the right word. I withdraw sleazy.
You regret. I mean, yeah.
I withdraw and regret.
Okay.
As far as I know, he's a completely honorable person.
Uh-huh.
And he won, or he beat me.
But what did he say about the blogger designation?
He said, as soon as I saw the word blogger by this guy's title, I knew he wasn't serious. He, being a Hollywood producer, identified himself as a businessman educator.
You could have called yourself that, Mickey. You're an educator.
Exactly.
You were in on the founding of Blogging Head, so talk about a keen business sense, man.
Well, exactly. You could be an entrepreneur, internet visionary.
Mm-hmm.
I did put out a leaflet once where I couldn't think of anything else to describe myself, so I called myself an internet pioneer.
That's true.
But it's weird. It comes off really weird in Spanish. It's like redacteur de blogs, which is pretty hilarious.
Yeah.
A consultant told me early on that I called myself blogger journalist. I should have just called myself blogger, sort of one man against the world. Why muddy it up with journalists? But I don't think either of those helped.
I would have concealed my identity entirely if I were you. I would have come up with what was basically a lie, I think. Businessman educator.
What educator?
Businessman educator. I like that.
Crime fighter educator.
Yeah.
So you know, it is what it is.
But you're claiming a kind of victory, right?
Well, I
sent around an email claiming trumpeting. You were trumpeting the results, Mickey. I saw that email.
It wasn't quite trumpeting. It said I wanted to do two things. I wanted to raise my issues and show that there was support of the Democratic Party from my side.
Mm-hmm.
I did the first. I did not do the second. So I sort of hinted at the second, ultimately my side will win because look at this big anti-boxer vote.
Mm-hmm.
That was at the time when I thought you could just add that, and if you look at the anti-boxer vote over the years, it's rising pretty dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's a pro-Latino vote, then that sort of takes away from that. Mm-hmm. But did I go back and revise my press release to emphasize these second thoughts? No. I revised my blog post.
And so what next, Mickey? I mean, what worlds are left for you to conquer?
I haven't the faintest idea what next. I could get on the blogging heads gravy train.
Yeah, you could.
I don't think there's enough for a book. There were some funny things that happened in the campaign.
Name one.
There was. God, I don't know. I did debate an empty box in San Francisco.
I know. You know, weirdly, there you were, and there's only three Holiday Inns in San Francisco. And as it happens, on that night, you were at one of them hosting that debate with a box to signify Barbara Boxer's failure to debate you. And on that very night, I was in a different Holiday Inn in San Francisco, Mickey. As fate would have it.
If you'd showed up, you would have added 20% to the
audience. I would have gotten you on Blogging Heads, man. You should have courted me more.
We should have turned the box so its empty side was out. That was a big mistake.
Mickey, no regrets, buddy.
That would have
changed
everything.
You fought the good fight to dream the impossible dream and so on.
That would have changed
everything. I don't want to hear any regrets, okay?
Sorry?
No regrets.
Of course I have regrets, but basically I think it was worth doing. Did you read my manifesto?
It doesn't ring a bell. You mean when the whole thing first started, I did go to your website, yeah.
No, there was one I published in the last couple of days of the campaign.
I may have missed it.
Anyway, it was, never mind then.
Was it good?
I don't know. You tell me.
Okay, I'll read it and tell you.
The political reporter for the LA Times was quoted on a blog as saying it was scary. At least I scared somebody.
Well, plus, you know, the LA Times, in its endorsement, did not endorse Barbara Boxer. Mentioned Barbara Boxer. I think did not mention that other guy, right? Quintana?
Right. The LA Times.
Okay, and chose not to endorse Boxer. That was a kind of victory for you.
The LA Times was weird. That was very nice, that editorial. It didn't endorse Boxer. It said a couple of nice. It said a nice and a nasty thing about me. That was fine.
Mm-hmm.
Then Jonah Goldberg wrote a hearty endorsement of me, which they spiked. So why did they spike that?
He's a columnist. Can't he write whatever he wants for the LA Times?
That's what I thought. But
they spiked it?
The editor there promises to tell me the story after the election.
Whoa. I would launch I would demand an investigation.
Well, the LA Times can spike whatever it wants too, you know.
Still.
They have a First Amendment right. But yes, so they didn't do completely right by me. They also published my piece on unions, which was very nice. They did a good job editing it. That was nice. But that's all on the editorial pages. The news pages didn't give me the time of day until the very, very end. You know, they kept writing things like, Carly Fiorina, who will face Barbara Boxer in November. Wait a minute. We have a primary before then.
Yeah.
And they said that, well, you don't haven't raised any money, and you don't, you know, there are no polls, so we're not going to cover you.
How much money did you raise?
A little less than $40,000, I think.
That's not bad.
And we managed to spend it all in a last-minute splurge.
You and your assistant, Ted?
Me and my assistant, Ted.
Who is Ted, Mickey?
Ted is a guy whose father recommended him. He was a nice guy, recent graduate of the University of Southern
California. It's about as solid an endorsement as a guy can have.
Sorry?
I said that's a very solid recommendation when your father recommends you.
His father is a fan. So he was a great guy. He did a good job. He's from the University of South Carolina studying, taking his LSATs. So the day before the election, he had to go take his LSATs. there was a time when I was heading for some sort of Democratic club endorsement in Napa, and there's like a hidden toll on the road that I missed, and the toll was $4, and I only had $3.85, and the toll ticker would not take $3.85.
So you didn't get there and harvest the endorsement?
No, but I thought this is going to be incredibly embarrassing. Candidate arrested for toll, fare jumping. And then I thought, wait, I need the publicity. I want to be arrested for fare jumping.
Definitely.
But by then it was too late. By then he just, sent me a ticket.
Well, that could have made the difference.
Send me a ticket in the mail.
Right there. So do you think you should have, generated more like antics like that? Like claim to have had an affair with Barbara Boxer or something, the way some blogger did in South Carolina or something like that?
I have these consultant friends who sketch out these scenarios which are barely plausible, which wound up with me beating Barbara Boxer.
Mm-hmm.
And it would involve starting early mm-hmm. and getting inside her head, so she would somehow start talking about me to the press, and the press would pick up on that. And there were various techniques to do that I didn't use just because I ran out of time. I mean, my campaign was sort of like this tiny little store in the East Village of New York called the Department Store, where they have all the departments that a regular department store would have. It's just they only have one item in each department.
Yeah.
So they have like a pair of shoes, and they have a dress, and they have a bridal gown, and they have like a suit and a pair of pants.
Yeah.
And so I had, I went.
You had a parachute and.
No, I had like a radio ad, and I ran on a station, and I had a TV ad, and I ran on a station, and I had a press release.
Parachute would have been a good idea, I think, actually.
But I didn't have them all at once. I didn't have them necessarily in time.
Right.
And I didn't have them in volume. So it's very scalable if I had more money, but it's...
Do you think that's all it was? You think with another, several hundred thousand dollars, I'd be treating you with more respect right now?
It's going to take more than that, Bob.
You're telling me.
People say you need $1 million to break through. I don't know. Seems to me it could be done for a lot less if you're clever about it.
So what are the big lessons? I mean, what would you do different if you were starting from the same starting point again? You didn't have $1 million. What would you do differently?
I would have made more efforts to get inside her head.
But how do you do that? What do you do?
Well, the most brilliant strategy was you send a nasty letter to her 50 top donors.
Ooh.
And I have learned, one thing I did learn, when somebody sent a nasty email to one of my donors, nothing pisses off a politician more than somebody trying to screw around with their money people.
Somebody bothered to send you, should be flattered. Somebody bothered to send a nasty letter to one of your donors?
The husband, we have this local hot congressional race where we had Jane Harman, relatively hawkish Democratic congresswoman.
Right.
And there was a peacenik heiress running against her, Marcy Winograd.
Right.
And her husband trolled my Facebook page and wrote nasty things about me and actually sent a nasty email to some friends.
Harman's husband or Winograd's husband?
Winograd's husband.
Why?
Because he's a Teamster union lawyer. He's a union lawyer, and he hates my position on unions.
Oh,
and he
yes.
thinks I have no business being in the Republican Party, especially the same party as his beloved wife.
So it was the unions that sabotaged you. Otherwise...
Enough with the snark, Bob. The point is he contacted one of my people who was throwing me a fundraiser, and it drove me up the wall in a completely irrational way. Because, it's...
Got under your skin.
Money is your lifeline, and somebody screws around with your lifeline, it's like screwing around with your food supply.
If you had this do over again, you would write letters to Boxer's contributors.
Well, it would be a good way to get inside her head.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's the one thing I could do. I would start earlier. I would... I hate raising money, so it's hard to see how I would raise more money.
Yeah, well, how did you like the whole political process? I mean, you don't strike me as, the baby-kissing type.
Well, I like... There are a couple of lessons. One is, anytime you talk to people, it was good. Even people who hated me. This jerk, Marcy Wittegrand's husband, he was actually making an argument, so fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to a meeting in Washington, Mount Washington, L.A., where there were a lot of Latino Democrats, and they were yelling and screaming about the Arizona law, and that was all good because they were passionate, and they actually made some good points. And I learned some things.
So you actually, you're not like Al Gore, who just fundamentally didn't like the political process. You're like Bill Clinton.
Well, not quite, but I like arguing with people, and I have a high tolerance for people getting in my face and disagreeing.
Yeah, but see, arguing with people, I don't think that's what politicians are supposed to do.
No, that's right. But I'm telling you what my
experience supposed to make everyone think that they agree
correct.
With you.
Correct. That,
so
that's
a
not
problem.
My technique.
That's a problem, should you ever try this again.
But yet I learned a lot, and I think there's a communitarian value in actually talking to people.
There you go.
So,
that's why you're on Blogging Heads.
So that was all good. The fundraising is a nightmare.
That seems like the worst part.
Because you're asking people for money, Bob. As president of Blogging Heads, you know what that's like.
Mm-hmm.
I learned that posture is really important.
Mm. That would be my downfall.
If you give exactly the same speech to two audiences, which I did, and in the one you're sort of leaning against a post because you're tired.
Right.
And in the other you're standing straight up and
going like this the way John Edwards does and the way Kim Geithner does.
You've
got to go like this, Mickey.
It makes all, the slashing motion.
You got to put three fingers together and thrust them out. That's
like,
the key.
Like this?
I don't know. I can't see you. John Edwards, Tim Geithner. You know Tim Geithner.
He's supposed to be terrible.
Well, he's a bad version of a well-coached guy.
I think the slashing motion is good.
What's the flashing motion?
Slashing.
Oh, slashing?
Karate.
Yeah, your hand, kind of. Maybe we're talking about the same thing.
I think we're talking about the same motion. Anyway, it works. But anyway, you just got to stand straight up like they told you in elementary school.
Yeah.
We're animals.
Also, don't you have to kind of move back and forth across the stage a little the way motivational speakers do?
That's okay, but the important thing is just to show, as a Darwinian, Bob, that the body language for success and the body language for failure are the same across the entire planet.
Across all species, in fact.
There's no tribe in which hanging your head is a statement of victory.
Not one.
And holding your head high is a statement of victory in all tribes. So you got to hold your head high.
Right.
You're an
right.
animal, and you're communicating on a primal level. So that's one thing I learned.
Mm-hmm.
Bad posture, blogging habits, don't cut it. I learned that it's your friends who'll screw you, not your enemies.
You're a little late with that one, Mickey, but I'm glad you got there before you died. What particular case are you talking about?
Well, your enemies will just attack you, okay? That's fine.
Right, and that doesn't hurt. They're your enemies. That's
right.
Their job.
And you're sort of happy if they attack you. That's,
right.
It's sort of good if they attack you because it means you got their goat.
Right.
That's fine. But there are just a bunch of stories in the press where friends of mine sort of cooperated with the reporter and offered them psychological insights into my character. Like one said that, I was just doing this because I was having a midlife crisis.
Who said that?
Which is really, I don't want to say.
Oh, come on. I'll Google it. I'm going to Google
process,
it while
well,
we speak.
Okay, well, go ahead. I'm in the process of making up with her. And my buddy John Alter said, he had this whole fantasy sex life for me that must be in his fertile imagination.
so to speak. He said you were doing this for the sex?
No, he just said they were trying to. It was Gawker, and they were trying to press him on wasn't I gay? And he said no. Women actually like Mickey.
I read that.
It was.
He made it sound surprising. I was surprised he made it sound surprising.
Sorry.
Yeah, but I was good, right? Nobody called me Mickey.
No, you were fine. But then he also sort of took a Solomonic position between me and Andrew Sullivan on whether I'm a homophobe. And he said, well, Andrew Sullivan's not wrong. I.e., Mickey is a homophobe.
Mm-hmm.
So that was not helpful. But none of that made any difference. It's just a valuable lesson.
Yeah, Gawker contacted us, and we provided them with some valuable footage, but nobody wanted to quote me.
What can I say?
I think that's because you did not list me. I think people came to you and said, well, who are your friends? And you were afraid that I would spill the beans if you steered them to me.
No, I had nothing to do with that project. They didn't contact me at all except for to ask me a couple questions. But they didn't ask for my list of my friends.
Okay.
We have high hopes for Alter's new book, which is actually out.
What's it on?
Obama.
Oh, that's right. I heard him on the radio. He was good.
Well, he has the best combination of access, independence, yet sympathy.
How did the Remnick book do?
I don't know. I went and heard Remnick, and it seemed like total pablum.
Uh-huh. You planning to write to the New Yorker anytime soon,
Bizarrely, Bob, in a desperate attempt, to get publicity, any kind of publicity, I brought a good friend of yours to see Remnick.
If it was Ann Coulter, this video's over.
Well, I guess it's over. Then I would have libeled Brian Quintana. That's great.
You brought Ann Coulter to see David Remnick?
And she liked it. She enjoyed it.
Well, she can't afford to be too damn choosy, Mickey. She's like an outcast.
No, she...
You're her only friend.
Remnick was funny. He's a funny, pleasant guy.
Yeah, I know him.
And he really knows how to play the audience, especially the Jewish audience, because they kept, wanting to know about Israel, and he kept putting it off until the very end. He was very, very funny. It just didn't seem to be much substance of the book. And whereas Alter, I haven't read his book, but I bet he had way more access to more recent things.
What's your take on Obama these days? Now that you are yourself a political veteran, what do you think about Obama's plight?
Well, it's interesting. The left is starting to accuse him of not abandoning them, but of sort of acting above them and not fighting for them. And there was
I'm accusing him of that on foreign policy, but I digress. Go ahead.
Well, there's this Joan Walsh column where she laments his said, well, there's all this damning stuff about how he handled the BP spill, and he's acting now to protect his brand, and he's not fighting for any of the Democrats. Instead of saying that the Republicans are obstructing his bills, he's saying, oh, Washington is a mess, and people of both parties are acting in Washington ways, and he's this has been described as transcendence as one of the key sort of...
Well, that was his campaign pitch, right?
Three things three things in the Obama brand.
Yeah.
But to the left, it's beginning to look an awful lot like triangulation. And it is different. In other words, he's not pushing off against Democrats on the Hill.
Mm-hmm.
He's just sort of floating above it and condemning all of Washington. And he also doesn't disagree with the Democrats in any of their agenda items. In other words, he nominally is for everything they're for, including tough Wall Street regulation and cap and trade and even, so-called card check, getting rid of the secret ballot for union organizing.
So you think it's just a tone thing?
And immigration reform. But triangulation has the virtue of, A, making him seem less wimpy. It would be, Clinton triangulated. He said, I'm for welfare reform. You liberals are wrong, okay? He didn't do it quite that strongly, but ultimately he did that.
Mm-hmm.
Obama doesn't do that. He just sort of said, yeah, I'm for card check. Just too bad it's not happening this year. I need more help. And sure, I'm for immigration reform, but hey, I guess it's not happening. And so he seems wimpy. He doesn't. Right. He never fights with his friends. He just doesn't come and defend them.
So you want him to tell liberals there's something there for that he's against, damn it.
Well, he is doing that on education, the one area where he is triangulating and is pushing off against the unions is...
He's against the teachers' unions?
Well, he's taking stands that are so hostile to the teachers' unions that even though he doesn't denounce them, they're freaking out.
Like what's a stand that's so hostile?
That Rhode Island school district that fired all his teachers? He said it was a good thing.
Mm.
I don't think the teachers' union likes that.
No.
He's pushing charter schools. He has this whole Race to the Top fund that is designed to promote reforms that the teachers' unions hate. He's objectively hostile to them in a way that he's not objectively hostile to anything
else. You just want him to say that overtly. So he does have a position that substantively amounts to rejection of a liberal cause, and you want him to just say that.
Yeah, although Clinton, during welfare, I guess, didn't really say that. He said what he was for and didn't really denounce it.
Yeah, no, I think that's just your own little fantasy there.
Well, I don't know if he's doing... Don't you think there's something wimpy about this float along, go with the flow, just didn't get it together to pass any of the things that your friends want attitude? I just think it would be better if he drew firm lines. Even Clinton drew a firm line recently in... He came and defended Blanche Lincoln. He said the unions are trying to punish her. He was completely 180 degrees opposed to the unions, in this instance. And he won. He carried the day for her. It helps to draw clear distinctions.
Well, it helped her, but that's not to say it would have helped him if he were president. I mean...
No, he didn't do that so much when he was president. I agree.
Right.
But now he's, grown a bigger pair and... He can do
Well, now he's not president anymore. He can afford to do stuff like this.
Well, there's that argument, too. But,
yes.
but you agree that Obama's transcendence is wimpy in foreign policy.
Oh, it's not transcendence in foreign policy. It's Bush all over again.
How do you mean?
I mean, first of all, he's in Afghanistan. He upped the ante. He's on, in some ways, more extreme than Bush. He's declared that he has the right to assassinate any American citizen living abroad he chooses to assassinate without due process of law. They have in mind this Yemeni cleric, but the point is he doesn't have to, give him a trial. He just has to say, I think it's a terrorist, and assassinate an American citizen.
But wait,
that's pretty extreme.
Let's do that.
He's accelerated the drone strikes in Pakistan.
In World War II, if there was an American citizen cooperating with the Nazis, wouldn't we have the right to kill him?
Well, you mean without due process?
Yes,
no,
war.
I don't think so.
You don't have notice and hearing before you bomb somebody in war.
Well, wait. Who did we bomb who was an American? Who did we intentionally kill in World War II who was an American citizen without due process?
You don't think weren't there various Americans cooperating with the Hitler propaganda machine, Tokyo Rose, and that there was an equivalent for in Nazi Germany? You don't think we would have killed him?
I don't know what we would have done. I don't think we did do it.
If there were an American who was spying for the Germans, we would have given him a notice and a hearing before killing him? I thought you were going to say, well, that was war, this isn't war.
Well, that's true, too. I mean, that was a clear-cut war. This is a case where, you're talking about there's kind of almost no really clearly defined enemy for them to be in league with. This is a departure. I mean, the official word on this is no, there's no precedent. Nobody has found a precedent for this claim.
Right, but there's also no precedent for, we don't have formal wars anymore. We have these things, and we have to evolve some sort of new precedents to deal with them.
Well, anyway, he is up the ante, influx of troops in Afghanistan. It's turning out disastrously, so far as I can tell. The drone strikes in Pakistan, he's doing, I'm not happy. There was an article in the Washington Post about how he's accelerated the deployment of covert military operations all over the place.
Don't you think...
Why would I be happy with his foreign policy? What should I be happy about?
I didn't say you should be happy. I was just asking you to explain. You had mentioned how his transcendence was bad in foreign policy.
No, I didn't say that. I said transcendence is not the problem in foreign policy. The problem is that Now, you know, in a few areas, he kind of briefly tried to fight the good fight. In Israel, he briefly did, and then backed down.
Don't you think that in Afghanistan, he's throwing everything at it, and then when that doesn't work, he'll pull the plug?
Maybe, but the article today in the paper saying, look, the initial timetable is just, it just ain't going to work out. Things are going too badly.
No, I agree, but I think he's saying we'll give it the best try we have, and then I could easily see in 2 years him saying, okay, I'm going to take one of these exit ramps.
He could. Look, when he, if you're saying at some point he might have a foreign policy I approve of, it's certainly possible. I'm just saying he doesn't now, and he's making things worse.
I don't think it's irrational to throw everything at it. He is feeding
the narrative of jihadi recruiters and that it's America versus Islam. And, you know, he gives a Cairo speech saying, no, no, we respect Islam. And then he goes about behaving more or less as George Bush does. He doesn't close Guantanamo as he said he would. And he continues to feed the narrative that is creating homegrown terrorists, and that is our nightmare. Because the way Americans respond to homegrown terrorists creates more of them. And I just think on foreign policy, he's tremendously disappointing. What has he done I should like? I mean a little token stuff in nuclear... You know, but even there, the funny thing is there he's almost too far left. I mean, he
gave himself exit ramps in Afghanistan. He is withdrawing from Iraq.
Well, when he starts using
them,
let me know.
He did put a lot of pressure on Netanyahu for a while.
For a day, for a few weeks.
You think he stopped putting pressure on
Netanyahu?
Well,
did you see how he responded to the flotilla thing? What did he do?
Well, if you wanted to change Israel's policy on flotilla, you would defend them as much as possible in public while pressuring them intensely in private. I assume that's what he's doing.
There's no evidence that. I mean, I don't assume he's doing that. I haven't heard he's doing that. I mean, sure,
there's things he'd lie, but why would you think Netanyahu
would respond to private pressuring?
There's a front page piece in the New York Times. Even I, with my busy campaign schedule, read about how we were pressuring him to reconsider the blockade of Gaza.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, everyone is at this point, yeah.
Well,
everyone. But we're going to, I think we're going to let him by with something less than a full-fledged end of the blockade.
I'm not necessarily disagreeing with you. I'm just saying that I think...
I mean, Israel has been one of Obama's relative strong points, I would say, in foreign policy. But I think basically, I guess because of the political blowback he got from initially confronting Netanyahu, he has not noticeably confronted him since the whole Biden visit thing. Yeah, I mean for several weeks there, he had kind of a, you know, he seemed to be playing hardball. But the flotilla thing was certainly an opportunity to say something other than, well, we'll wait until all the facts are in, you know.
What would you have said?
Well, I'll tell you what I'd like to see. I'd like Israel to turn over the video. I mean, you know, they say they have not only the video they shot, they have the video that the people on the ship shot, and they're releasing like a total of 3 minutes and saying, see, we were right. Well, I would like to see all the video. Why not? If you're not ashamed of it, why don't you make it public?
Isn't that waiting for all the facts to come in?
Yeah, but Obama hasn't said that. I mean, Obama hasn't said... He says, let's wait for all the facts to come in, and he's probably going to say that this commission that Israel is proposing is fine, which is an Israel, you know, a commission totally selected by Israel, and as I gather it is hamstrung in its powers... If Obama comes out and says, no, that's not enough, we want a truly international commission, we want true transparency, we want the videos released, then, yeah, that'll be a different story. I haven't heard him saying anything like that.
Well, I wouldn't mind him saying that. That's why I can't run for Congress for my district.
Did that kind of stuff come up? Did foreign policy come up at all?
Oh, absolutely. This woman, Marcy Winograd, whose husband trolls my Facebook page, said that if she wasn't running for Congress, she would be on the boat or something like that.
On the flotilla?
On the flotilla boat. It's a pretty extreme position for an American politician.
You know, I should say, I'm not of the view that it's the flotilla thing that was, like, tremendously mishandled. I think if you're going to have a blockade, it's not always going to be easy to stop ships, and it may be that somebody winds up dying. My problem is with the blockade itself.
That's what I sort of thought, seeing the video that was released, was, well, you know, you either let the ship through or you don't. If they start beating up on you when you board the ship, then
yeah, but Mickey,
you got a problem.
That's why I want to see the video of the initial boarding.
Yes,
the so-called paintball guns that they had are apparently capable of shooting rubber bullets.
I'm with you there.
And rubber is kind of a euphemism for those bullets. If they hit the ship and started shooting rubber bullets, well, I would expect people to fight back, okay? And I would like to know if that's what happened. Yeah.
Anyway, the point is that this congressional candidate said she would be on the flotilla. Jane Harmon released a very nasty ad and basically thumped her in the general election. So,
yeah, well, Jane Harmon and her husband, too. Didn't her husband invent the Harmon? Isn't he the Harmon? There's some music Harmon.
He's the Harmon of everything.
Yeah, right.
He's the Harmon of Harmon Kardon. He's the H in KLH.
Exactly.
He's a very, very smart and impressive man. He's was also an innovator in terms of worker participation experiments, trying to delegate more authority to the shop floor.
But
he's sort of the visionary.
But isn't he famously right-wing on these issues? I read that in the Times recently.
I don't know. I absolutely don't know.
I think so, because they were speculating about him trying to buy Newsweek.
That wouldn't be the end of the world.
Depends on whether it's true that he's famously right-wing on these things. But anyway, so foreign policy came up, and what position did you carve out?
No, that was in her race. That wasn't in my race.
So it didn't come up in your race?
It came up a couple of times. I got asked about the flotilla, actually, and I changed the subject.
Wisely.
Praised that I stood with Obama against Netanyahu.
See, what you should have done is carved out a distinctive position on foreign policy, like bring all our troops home or something. Assuming you agree with that.
I don't think I agree with that. There are a whole bunch of issues that I could have brought up. I could have endorsed legalizing marijuana, which I believe in.
Mm-hmm.
That would have maybe gotten some attention. And I guess I decided I wanted the race to be about the issues that I wanted. And I was raising mainly these two issues, and I was going to stick with them so that every vote for me was a vote that agreed with me on these two issues, in theory.
Mm-hmm.
In retrospect, maybe a bit of broadening would have been good.
Yeah.
But it would have to be broadening earlier. I didn't think doing it at the last minute in a sort of desperate plea for attention made sense.
Did you talk about the oil spill? That's not a California issue, right?
It's hard to out anti-oil spill Barbara Boxer.
Yeah, well, you should have gone the other direction. Hey, this is no big deal.
Do you think there's any plausible argument for that?
No. You could have said it's not California's problem.
Because we banned the rigs years ago.
Yeah, right.
But we didn't, of course. They're still working.
Oh, never mind.
We banned new drilling, I think.
Okay.
Anyway, I didn't do any of that. I stuck to my issues, I think, you know, for that reason, you know, managed to inject them into the debate a little bit, but also got clobbered.
Do you think you should have stuck with the Slate blog? I mean, apparently you thought that would constrain your ability to raise funds, and that certainly you couldn't use the blog to raise funds, right?
I don't think I should have stuck with the Slate. The issue was, do I keep blogging for Slate and try to run for Senate on top of that, or do I, you know, move my blog to my campaign site? I moved it to my campaign site because I thought I was going to be able to raise money with it. That didn't work, but nobody... You know, I took about a third of my readers with me, but they didn't really contribute that much. But I wouldn't have had time to write the blog.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even have time to do a proper campaign, much less do a proper campaign and blog, too. So, you know, it was like I was one guy trying to do all these things. You know, like I would buy TV time and I would call the TV station and negotiate with the TV station. Other candidates have people that do that for them.
Did it turn out they were flexible?
No, they're completely inflexible because...
I think it would violate some law for them to give some candidate special deals.
Well, there's a law that they have to give you the lowest rate, and that's what you got to take. So that simplifies it. But there was a hassle approving my ad. There are all these. Another thing I noticed is an incredible amount of BS regulations that the FEC puts out. That, you know, they're not as bad as they could be, and they're probably trying to keep them simple. But even so, they're. Just what they have to do is if you add them all up, is pretty burdensome. There are these stand-by-your-ad disclaimers that you have to say, this ad was paid for and approved by Mickey Cowes, two separate disclaimers, and they were too close to the edge of the screen. So on some TV sets, they might have fallen off the screen, and then the station would be participating in a violation of the regulation. So They wanted me to redo my ad to move the disclaimers closer to the center of the screen. You know, a whole bunch of little things like that.
Your TV ad was good. Your version of the Paul Wellstone ad was good. We should link to it.
Thank you. The piece I did for Huffington Post, sort of trying to talk to liberals about why, even if you agree with Wellstone, you should agree with me now, was sort of the best thing I did.
We should link to that. I didn't see it.
But because it had the most a more reasonable tone, and it was trying to actually reach out to somebody and convince them. And also, I was so punch struck at the time that you sort of get looser and goosier.
It would be fun. I would love to run for office, you know, with no hope of actually winning. But
well, you get caught in this trap. Whereas if you say you have no hope of actually winning, then they use that against you.
So, I noticed. So what forum were you excluded from by virtue of that?
Well, they didn't let me speak at the Democratic Convention, but they didn't let Mr. Quintana, who, by the way, is a fine, fine citizen.
This would be the sleazy producer you alluded to earlier?
And as far from sleazy as you could possibly imagine.
Yeah.
They didn't let him talk either, and he said he was going to win. So obviously it wasn't that I said I wasn't going to win.
Mm-hmm.
It's just they didn't want anybody else on the stage with Barbara Boxer. That's sort of the way they do things.
Yeah.
But the nominal reason they gave was that I wasn't viable because I said I wasn't going to win. But people also don't pay attention to you. Even voters don't pay attention to you unless you say you're going to win.
I hate that about the world.
I don't know how Gore Vidal did it. Gore Vidal ran against Jerry Brown and got 15% of the vote.
Mm-hmm.
Did he say he was going to win? I don't know.
Hunter Thompson ran for, police chief of Aspen?
He almost won, I think.
I know.
Well, Gore Vidal didn't almost win, but he did get 415,000 votes.
So do you think you may, in some sense, stay in the political world, Mickey?
It's possible.
You know what I think you ought to do?
I mean, yeah.
Here, and I'm kind of serious. Rather than you personally run again, you should start a nationwide... you know, Tea Party-like group. Like the Tequila Party or something. Call it whatever you want. But I'm serious that... See, my theory about the Tea Party is, if you look at what initially got people's attention about the Tea Party, it wasn't that any one of the demonstrations was so huge. It's the number of different cities in which they were held on that one day. And... seems to me that is something that technology permits you to do, to take something that doesn't necessarily have a huge following and take it nationwide. You know, it's the same thing that permits you to have your Regina Spectors or whoever who go from city to city and do concerts for 1,000, 2,000 people. Right? This is a new phenomenon. When we were young, you didn't have rock stars with a nationwide but smallish following. That was not technologically possible. Now it is. So I think, while 5% is not enough to get you anywhere near elected, if you have a nationwide group that is that big, you can command the attention of candidates everywhere and get them to cater to your group, right?
How? By having small rallies in 100 different cities?
Yeah.
I question your... I think the small rallies in 100 different cities is technologically more possible. Regina Spektor could have toured 20 years ago and gotten the same How did technology enable her to do that?
20 years ago, I mean, Springsteen is a classic case. He goes from being regionally known in Jersey to being nationally known by everyone who listens to the radio. And those were the two choices. You did not have people back then breaking out nationally to like a, with a niche following in all these cities. You either got famous and went national or did not go national.
What about Lee Michaels?
Who the hell is Lee Michaels? That's what I mean. Who the hell is Lee Michaels?
He had a niche following, and yes, he had a hit.
You had to have a hit.
What about Jeff Buckley?
Who the hell is Jeff Buckley?
These are people who toured coffee houses. The coffee house circuit was exactly what you're saying didn't exist.
I still say it didn't exist. I deny that it existed.
What about Dave Van Ronk?
That's what I mean. I've never heard of these people.
What about Pete Seeger?
Pete Seeger was famous.
What about the Chad Mitchell Trio, damn it?
They were pretty famous.
They were pretty big.
But look, anyway, have you thought about like a national thing? Where you're not saying I'm going to win any election. It's just an interest group?
We're what?
You know, create your version of the Tea Party, or is it that you really need one single source of rage? I think that's the problem.
No, it's a good idea. It's sort of like the DLC without the compromising lobbyist funding.
Right.
But that's the problem. The compromising
the DLC you never would have heard of, in other words.
Sorry?
In other words, the DLC you never would have heard of.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
I keep thinking of Paul Taylor, who was a very good Washington Post reporter.
Yeah.
Who went and headed a group that was designed to give all presidential candidates 5 minutes of free time, and if they didn't show up, they would photograph the empty chair. And the idea was that this 5 minutes of free time every night would drive the campaign. It was a reaction to the Dukakis Bush campaign, where Bush had his flag factory every night, and that supposedly drove the campaign. It was an intelligent response to that campaign, but it was fighting the last war.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy left a career as a national reporter to do this thing, and it just turned out, I don't think, to be a smart move. So you don't want to make that kind of not smart move.
No.
I don't want to throw away my lucrative blogging heads career.
No.
For like a non-profit position that only pays like $200,000-$300,000 a year.
No.
And that wouldn't work.
I wouldn't.
That would be bad.
So our viewers, I think, our commenters should help you decide. They should suggest things for you to do.
Well, I actually wrote down a list of things that I might do.
What's on the list?
Start a radio show.
Yeah.
Start a nonprofit group.
Yeah.
Start a cluster of blogs. Not just my blog, but have like other people. Young people doing investigative blogging for me, and
mm-hmm.
Et cetera, all reflective of my viewpoint. The problem, of course, is who pays for it.
Mm-hmm.
Report about the political race. Which would sort of be annoying because I'd be reporting about the people that won the race, as a person who didn't win the race. Write law review articles.
Now there, I think you've really hit on something there, Mickey.
What?
Write law review articles.
Well, I have a bunch of law review articles that I think might be good to write.
Mm-hmm.
And I love footnotes. Give lucrative college speaking tour. That sounds good.
That would be good.
Write a novel version of my campaign in which I win.
Yeah, books are not selling like they used to, Mickey.
And your thing of leading a nationwide Tea Party-like movement.
Yeah, see, I just don't think your two big issues maybe have a natural synergy, immigration and unions. I don't know.
No, they have a natural, whatever the opposite of synergy is.
Yeah, we've talked about this, I think, yeah. That's your problem.
My biggest regret in the campaign was that I never went and talked to a black church. And I think they would be very sympathetic to the immigration part and not so sympathetic to the union part.
A good example
in fact,
of how the dissonance between your two positions,
there's a
yes.
Clash. There's a clash there.
Yeah.
I don't care. It's what I think is right, but there's definitely a clash there in terms of the politics.
That could have been your motto. I don't care. It's what I think
is right.
Well,
it's very hard in general, to separate what I think is right from what will win an election.
Yeah.
And you have to keep reminding yourself that, because I keep getting these arguments when people say, House has no... It's like the worst thing they can say about you now is that you have no base. It's like that's the most insulting thing that people
right.
can say.
Saying you have no principles is not an insult. Saying you have no base is
right.
an insult.
And it's like you're a child molester or something if you have no base.
Right.
Their argument is, well, it's the base doing the opposite of what you want, Mickey, that will win elections. And it's very hard to concede that that could be right. And yet I would, you know, my positions are still right. It's just they don't win elections.
Yeah.
And that's sort of like the hardest thing for anybody in politics to do is to separate what's right from what will win.
Yeah.
And at some point you sort of give up. But, you know, it's possible that the right positions clash politically and are political losers.
It is, you know as well as anyone that's possible. Now, on your list of possible things to do, I did not hear just regular go back to blogging.
Well, that's sort of...
That's the default.
No, that's sort of always there. That's like breathing. I mean...
Well, why don't
why
you...
Why not blog? There's no reason not to blog, so of course I'll keep blogging.
Well, maybe you could start off with blogs about the campaign and lessons learned and so on, and amusing vignettes such as the toll booth one.
Pretty hilarious, Bob, huh?
I'm still recovering.
yeah, I could do that, but that period will be short, and it's sort of so inevitable. It's sort of annoying to have to do it.
Yeah.
The model for all this is Arianna Huffington.
Yeah.
Who lost her governor's race and immediately shifted to founding the Huffington Post.
Yeah.
Without batting a damn eye.
But so what, you're going to start a network of blogs or something, you said, is one possibility?
I think that's not a starter, because how would I get the money?
Right.
You know how hard it is to raise money. It's hard to raise money. In this environment. How's that going, by the way?
You know, surprisingly well, almost.
Good.
I mean, you know, it's pretty much all about foundations, I would say.
I don't quite understand how you do it, because you've hired good people.
I have.
Everybody who works for you is like first class.
Yeah, they are.
You have the only successful redesign of a website I've ever seen.
Although that was a while ago. But it's holding up. It's functionally solid.
It was a huge hit.
Yeah.
And you're paying for all these people.
Yeah.
So why aren't you going broke?
Well, have you ever seen some of our shows that say next to them, supported by, like, some foundation or something?
No.
Well, you should take a look.
Okay. You're not doing the American Prospect thing of, like, having a special pro-labor union issue funded by the labor union.
No, we have not. We have not gone there, no.
Yeah. So,
We had a series of... foreign policy discussions supported by the Carnegie Corporation, stuff like that.
Yeah, okay. That's good.
Templeton Foundation took some heat from that from our commenters because of something or other.
You're a proven grantsman.
I'll tell you, it's tough, but we're hanging in there.
And I'm not a proven grantsman, so that's why I don't think my cluster of blogs will work. There's a guy in L.A. who does it, a guy named Ron Kay.
Don't know him.
He's former editor of the L.A. Daily News, which is the number two newspaper in town. And he has a whole active website called Ron Kay L.A., and he has people working for him, and they're doing investigative work. But I don't think he's, you know, I think he's doing it on a shoestring, and I don't think there's a lot of money in it for him. He's just doing it because he cares about it, and I don't think he needs the money, so...
Yeah, now nobody has a revenue model, as far as I can tell.
I mean, I guess it's encouraging to know that even Newsweek doesn't have a revenue model. So,
no, I think we may be moving into a period where you know, more and more journalism is either philanthropically supported or perishes, with a few exceptions.
No, that's clearly true. What do you think happens to Newsweek?
I think some rich person who wants influence buys it. That's why, what's his name? Harmon's name came up in an article. Maybe it was an article by David Carr. Is that the guy's name who writes about media for the Times?
Yes.
maybe I'm mixing two articles up, but he certainly mentioned the possibility of, you know, rich person with political obsession. That seems to me almost all it's good for at this point. I don't see any near-term revenue model involving Newsweek
that's obviously, it turns into the New Republic. That's what happens.
Right, except it's got, its annual costs are above $20 million right now just to keep it going. I mean, I think it lost $20 million or something.
It's very expensive. On the other hand, it has some ad revenue that the New Republic doesn't
have. Yeah, but what you do is radically cut your costs, and then you milk the brand for influence for as long as you could.
Yeah.
It wouldn't cost that much to put something out that looks remarkably like what Newsweek looks like.
Well, that's what American newspapers are discovering, is that they can cut costs radically and still fool people into thinking that the same product's the same.
Yeah, no, it's a short-term route to some influence that would last for a while, and you might be able to parlay it into something enduring if the advertising climate changes, which it could.
My point is turn into a half a car magazine, Newsweek and Track.
There you go. Yeah. News Track.
Well, the car ads are their mainstay.
Yeah.
Car ads and health ads. More articles about science and God, Bob. Those are the best sellers. That's bread on your table.
I'm spent when it comes to that. I've done my part.
Okay.
I guess we should... I'm supposed to, do a turnaround on a column I wrote.
That's fine. I really am worried that I'm going to subject you to this lawsuit.
That you're going to what?
That
I'm
going to
subject
you to a... Oh, no,
just because you call that guy a sleazy producer?
I think I'm going to lobby to have you excise that portion of the tape, Bob.
Well, that would add mystery if there was something bleeped.
I think we may have to bleep it, because this guy has a history of litigation. Let's put it that way.
Well, see, what bothers me, what I want to bleep is the part where you warned me about this. That's what would make me legally liable.
All right. Well, but then we have to bleep the part you just said. Well, you say you're going to bleep the part. We're digging ourselves in deeper.
It's just bleep after bleep after bleep.
I think there's a stop digging is the rule. But
let's just discuss this offline.
Okay, this guy did do very, very well.
He's a good guy. I've always thought that about him. He's a good guy. So, I like the Superman movies, all of them. Which one was this?
I don't know. I have nothing but good things to say about him.
Me too.
He's a fine American.
And the very opposite of a porn king.
Of a what?
Porn king. He's the opposite of that.
A quarantine?
Never mind, maybe.
Are you watching the World Cup? And then we'll stop.
Well, you know what I noticed is people are watching it. Like in the YMCA, why America is suddenly watching the World Cup? 10 years ago, nobody in America paid any attention to the World Cup. What has happened? And I'm not just talking about games involving America. I go into the Y locker room, it's like Brazil against Korea, and people are fixated.
No, that's true.
What's happening?
It's completely crippled Twitter.
Wow.
It's weird. Twitter has crashed. Yet the celebrity seems still to be able to tweet. I'm very suspicious.
And this is after the data showing that actually playing soccer does brain damage.
How does... because you hit the ball with your head?
Yeah, it's bad for you. It is.
Huh.
I mean, so much... that's like... I don't see it... 20 years ago, I thought it was going to replace Little League as America's, little kid sport. No way.
Maybe they could change the rules so you don't use your head? You could use your hands?
I don't think so. You know what the key to the appeal of soccer is, Mickey? You know, Americans, traditionally didn't understand it. They're like, whoa, it's so low scoring. Nothing ever happens. It's boring. You know what the key to the drama is?
Low cost.
No. The insecurity of possession.
See, I think the key is that with the men's game, the distance from which they... I think we've been through this. This is what got me called a sexist, I think. The men's legs are powerful enough that they could score from very far out.
Uh-huh.
So there's a constant tension anytime anybody like Maradona has the ball anywhere near that half of the field. He might just let loose. And that's exciting. Whereas the women's game, that threat is much smaller, and hence the women's game is a much less...
I actually disagree. I think the tension results almost entirely from the fact the kind of possession itself is almost always being contested, and the drama is, can the team maintain control of the ball and move it somewhat forward? Unless, you know, they don't score from very far out very often, Mickey. They really don't.
I guess maybe I'm just watching the games that have the best players in the world in them. And
maybe you're just a sexist and deserve all the blowback you got.
Beckham can score from far out. Well, it's obviously both. And they could do things to change the women's game, as with women's basketball, to make it just as exciting. But they don't do that because they slavishly imitate the male rules.
I think I'll let you dig your own grave on this one, buddy.
Just don't ask John Alter about me, will you?
I won't. I'm sorry that friendship's over, Mickey.
The friendship's not over.
I'm sure he meant well.
He's a good friend. We've had it out. We're having it out.
Okay. If they had called me, I would have said, women like Mickey in a way that did not convey any surprise whatsoever.
Yeah. I'm so glad they didn't call you.
I'm insulted, but so be it.
Anyway, so we'll talk offline.
We'll talk offline, and then we'll talk again on Blogging Heads once you know where your life is headed.
God, don't wait for that.
Okay, then sooner than that.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
Thanks.
See you around.
See ya.